Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I think that the Republicans taking both the House and the Senate will have massive repercussions.
So I feel the same way, although I do feel like at 22, I probably don't have enough life experience to be the most credible person, aside from the fact that I'm coming up through the context of somebody who's totally disillusioned with bipartisanship because it's all I've really known.
And you're speaking for a lot of people on that. So
yeah, I mean, I'm shocked, actually, like since I've been speaking out and being more vocal about my own beliefs, the amount of people in my life that I would never know think similarly or have similar suspicions about the system. New Yorkers who pretend that they're like, yeah, no, I'm totally blue, I'm totally down the line. Like, no, everyone secretly has their doubts and has a lot more kind of forward party energy than I think people realize.
It is my pleasure to welcome to Forward, columnist for the New York Post, co-host of the podcast The Lost Debate, and fellow political independent to size up Election Day, Ricky Schlott. Welcome, Ricky.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Excited to have you. So, Ricky, you have a fascinating origin story where you and I were bonding over our love for a book, The Coddling of the American Mind, by my friend Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff.
Yes.
And you read this book and it had a profound impact on you.
I did. I read it my freshman year of college, and I'm 22, so I'm very much a member of Gen Z. And all of their analysis was, in part, I looked at myself and I said, oh, they're really right, and this is why I feel this way and think this way. And I looked around me at the environment and felt a little like an ideological outsider at NYU at my time there. And a lot of that kind of illiberalism that I was seeing, they diagnosed in such a concise way without making it a partisan argument at all. I think that they really nailed it in just making it palatable to anybody who's actually concerned about bettering my generation. And so it was a fabulous book. I was lucky enough to cross paths with Greg Lukianoff for an article that I wrote a while ago. I interviewed him for the New York Post, and that turned into a fellowship at his organization. And now I'm actually co-authoring with him the follow-up to The Coddling of the American Mind, wow. The Canceling of the American Mind. And John will be writing our intro. So it's kind of amazing that a book that made me kind of wake up from my slumber and become politically interested and active and kind of analyze what's around me is now something that I'm able to do my small part in contributing to the follow-up of. So.
Well, you're getting new fans all the time because you are a genuine independent. You have your own perspective and point of view. And you identify as a libertarian, is that right?
Yeah, I do. I'm a registered independent, and I definitely would say that I don't necessarily identify with the Libertarian Party, but the ideology definitely is where I kind of find myself. Yeah.
Yeah, I see you as a classical liberal along the lines of the Frank Fukuyama school of thought.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking at an historic election day. I mean, people say every election day is like this most important one, but yeah. I feel like this one is a big deal. And you and I are going to let people know what we think is going to happen on Tuesday. I feel like there was a point in the summer, and I wrote as much. I said that it seemed like the Democrats had this second or third wind. It was in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision. And there was a ton of energy and enthusiasm. And now it seems like the energy has flipped for a number of reasons, where I now believe that the Republicans are going to win the House by some number of seats. It's likely to be, in my mind, in the low double-digit range, which would be seismic. And a lot of people are trying to figure out whether the Senate also flips. So let's talk about the House for a second. First, do you agree that it seems like things are trending toward the Republicans in these last days?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's undeniable. And I felt the same thing where I saw following the Dobbs decision, such a renewed kind of social political energy versus the economic side that I think we're seeing right now that has... we only have so much attention to pay, unfortunately, to an issue like that when you're going to the grocery store and your bill is through the roof, or you're filling up your tank of gas, or you're really scraping by to make rent. And I think that the economic realities and the sense that the current administration has at least in part exacerbated the inflation situation is something that just keeps hitting home for people. Even if something like Dobbs is a big abstract social reality, I think it's a little hard to run away from that. And then also the crime optics as well. I feel recently there's been a hard shift towards conversation around things that do help the Republicans in the end.
Yeah, you live here in New York, right?
Yeah.
And so crime is an issue.
Huge issue.
Here for sure. I agree with you that inflation is still the dominant concern for most Americans. I saw one correlation that gas prices going up and the approval rating for the Democratic administration were essentially in perfect inverse lockstep.
Yeah.
Where when gas prices go up, then people are sad, and that makes sense. I don't know if you drive a car nowadays.
I don't. I'm a pedestrian now.
So I do drive, and I got to say, like, I think... every time about the politics of it, anytime I stop and get gas. But I now feel like Republicans win the House. Would you project the same?
Yeah, I think that at least in my sense, from my vantage point, I think that's definitely the case. And I would say even anecdotally, like this is total anecdata, but I've been surprised
anecdata,
by some.
I like that. Is that a new term that I have to start using?
I'm not sure where I plucked that from, but I don't think it's an original Rickyism. But I've been surprised by just how much issues of crime have swayed my female friends, especially.
Interesting.
Yeah, particularly in New York, I think I've been surprised by the fact that that's been something that people are acutely aware of. I don't know if that has national implications, but certainly even from very progressive friends of mine, I've heard that their political decisions are going to be at least in part informed by the fact that they feel less safe here, especially as young women. So
let's bring it to New York. You tweeted, hey, it looks like Lee Zeldin might actually be in this thing.
Yeah.
Could New York turn red? That race has tightened a lot. I have to say it would be shocking if Kathy Hochul were to lose the gubernatorial race here in New York to Lee Zeldin. Lee Zeldin, for those of you who aren't in New York, he's a Trump endorsee. He's, I suppose, a bit of an election denier type. So he's not even what you'd consider sort of your run-of-the-mill like New York moderate Republican.
Yeah.
But he now is... climbing quickly in the polls with crime as a signature issue.
Yeah, I mean, they were. There was a New York Post cover recently, which I mean, I think he had just scraped past her in one poll, which might not be representative of it by and large. But I think the fact that he's gotten as far as he has, even though to a lot of people other aspects of his platform aren't palatable, goes to show how acute the crime situation is being felt here.
Yeah, I talked to a traditional Democrat who said the same thing that some of your girlfriends are saying. He said that he's now a one-issue voter and it's crime, and it's because someone was shot on his block. And he said when that happens, then at that point, nothing else matters. And he's been disappointed by the Democratic response to public safety concerns because there seems like there's something ideologically holding them back, where in his case, and he doesn't live in New York, so I think this is going to be a national issue. That what his local officials were saying was tying it to bigger issues like poverty, which may or may not be wrong, but it's not what you want to hear when you're concerned about someone being shot on your block. So I think Kathy Hochul still pulls it out.
Yeah.
I mean, the Democratic registration advantage in New York is, I think it's nearly 2-1. But I think it's going to be a nail biter. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I probably agree with you, even though I think I take heart in the fact that there's actually a competitive race in the first place. I'm not a huge fan of either option, but I think on the crime front, it's good to see that there is a referendum on the status quo here. I mean, there have just been like egregious cases, like Alvin Bragg's office not going after the or arresting the bodega guy who was clearly in self-defense, who ended up having his wounds get infected in Rikers. I don't know if you followed that story, but like the optics of like an ideological response to crime, like you're talking about, I think having a strong referendum on that is a healthy thing, even if it means that Hochul does still win. I think that it just puts a fire under some people's butts right now to make a change. And I think it's very, very necessary from personal experience living here, for sure.
This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product. And if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. I think that there's definitely going to be a wake-up call. I predict there's going to be a Republican upset somewhere in the country, where a race that you would not expect.
Yeah.
I was just seeing today that in Washington State, a state that Biden won by 15 to 20 points or something, like they actually are putting money in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these races, you can tell what's going on based upon the money trail, which brings me to the U.S. Senate races, where most of the attention is. So anyone who keeps up with me knows that I'm super into the Evan McMullen versus Mike Lee race in Utah. Are you excited about that race, or is that not something you've been paying attention to?
I've been following the Fetterman one a little bit more recently. But one general question that I do have for you that I would really like to get an answer to is, how do you feel about this trend that I've seen of more and more candidates either refusing to debate or just declining debates, or at least debating less than they normally would have in the past?
Well, this is definitely relevant for
Arizona.
John Fetterman and Arizona. Okay. This is a great question. So this is a depressing, but I think debates are fading out more and more, in part because of the polarization and the ideological nature, and in large part because there's typically someone who's going to benefit from the debate, the underdog, and someone who's potentially going to lose from the debate, the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I've now been in 7 presidential debates and 4 mayoral debates. So I've done a lot of these things. And most debates don't change anything that much.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to see it through your own partisan lens, and your person performs well in your own mind. So debates are pivotal only when there are outliers. But I think we may have just seen one of those outliers in the John Fetterman, Dr. Oz debate. And my feeling after that debate was they should not have let him debate.
Yeah. And do you feel that that means that that makes someone unfit for office?
What's interesting is that these debates are in many ways an anachronism to a time when you would have folks actually stand next to each other and evaluate them in various ways. And then it became this TV ritual. I do think that there should be some expectation. And in John Fetterman's case, it's a legitimate health inquiry where if you believe that a U.S. senator might have to communicate and synthesize and do a lot of intellectual work, then if the person is not necessarily going to be able to demonstrate those capacities in a televised hour, it's like, is that relevant?
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people who are watching that thinking like, I don't care, this guy is on my team. His policies are going to align with mine. Though the reverse is true when you talk about Herschel Walker, where they would see someone like Herschel Walker, and you know, they're different people and different sets of issues. It makes me sad when candidates duck debates. When another candidate, typically the underdog, jumps up and down and is like, "This person has to debate me." I'm very sympathetic, and it does worry me that I think you're going to see more candidates duck them. It's one of the symptoms of just how ossified and dysfunctional our system is.
Yeah.
Where people, you think like, look, I've got these voters, there are only two teams. If I just hang on to my voters, I'm going to win. So why risk it? I do not like the gubernatorial candidate in Arizona ducking that debate. Like that
based on the fact that her ideas are dangerous and so they shouldn't be platformed, which to me feels like the perfect opportunity to invite those ideas into a debate and then slap them down if they're so egregious.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, Arizona is more or less ground zero for the election denier takeover of the Republican Party in that state. I'm heading to Arizona in a couple of weeks, in part for this reason. We've endorsed Mark Kelly in the Senate race there, but we have not endorsed in the gubernatorial race. And the challenger is a woman named Carrie Lake, who's a TV personality, seems very telegenic, is an election denier. And it seems like the Democratic candidate, whose name escapes me,
Katie Hobbs.
Katie Hobbs says, look, I'm not going to debate an election denier. Is that a justifiable rationale? You know, like in my mind, it's not a good look. That race is going to go down to the wire. My feeling is that one reason why she might not want to debate Carrie Lake is that Carrie Lake is probably a very talented performer. As a TV
host. Yeah. I mean, I think I've looked at the statistics that say that to your point, debates don't tend to sway people too much. But I think this will be an interesting round to kind of see how it plays out, because I would imagine that my little prediction theory here is that the lack of debate might have a much larger impact on the vote in the end than a debate would have. Like, I think the optics of saying like, no, I'm just not going to do it, or no, I don't feel like I owe it to voters, might end up harming people in the end. I've looked at the statistics of like the typical Senate race. It used to be like 17 debates in like the top five races or something like that. And it's like all the way down to seven just over the past decade or something roughly around there. And I think that's a troubling trend if we see our opponents as so far beyond the pale that we can't even have a conversation in the same language or even about different issues if the election denying problem is the underlying take.
Yeah, if that's the, I mean, that was the rationale that Katie Hobbs expressed. And you're probably right that it's not going to serve her candidacy well. I do think that incumbent members of Congress get away with this all the time. Because their upstart opponents might not have the energy and traction to take advantage of it. And also, one of the things I'm seeing consistently is that these debates will exclude quote-unquote minor party candidates or a third party, where you'll have the Democrat and the Republican and then, let's say, a Green or a Libertarian.
Like sometimes a Libertarian gets in. Sometimes.
Yeah, and big picture, the Republicans are saying they're going to boycott the presidential debates in 24. I mean, it's a long time from now. But they're saying, look, it's biased against us. You know, we're not going to show up. So I hope debates go the other direction, where there are more of them and they're more inclusive and you have more people. But the trend is heading the other way.
Yeah, it's really disheartening, because I think especially for a lot of young people, like, the statistics are incredible. How many of us are independents and actually are open to hearing different ideas and don't necessarily just ascribe to one belief. Like, there's a statistic that like the average Gen Zer is twice as likely than the general electorate to be a registered independent.
Nice. And
so, yeah.
Let's go, young people. Maybe you can still save us.
And so I think a forum like a debate is actually really informative for people who haven't just decided I'm going to check all the boxes all the way down. So I think it's really disappointing. I hope that candidates that are just totally walking away from it, just thinking that they have things can take things for granted, at least get a little bit of a ding from it in terms of their voter turnout, because I think that's like the very least that you owe a voter is I can stand up and express my beliefs and stand up to the type of opposition that I will be seeing in office, even if I don't like their views or I find them unpalatable or I fundamentally disagree with them. So I found it to be disappointing, but I think there's more and more independent voters that want to be won over in a debate. I mean, even my dad is 85, which I was a very late addition to the family. And he, after, I guess, since 1955, he registered as a Republican. And he just told me the other day, oh, I re-registered as an independent.
Oh, like, good job.
Wow. So I think there's a whole swath of people who want to hear different ideas actually play out.
Yeah. Anyone who follows me and forward knows that I think the answer is more democracy, not less. And yet you're seeing it diminish before our eyes in various ways. This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit, generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang. So back to this Fetterman Oz race.
Yeah,
I thought that John Fetterman was going to win that race until recently, and now I think Oz is going to squeak it out. And if
I agree.
And if Dr. Oz wins Pennsylvania, then the odds of the Republicans winning the Senate shoot up because that was the Democrats' best chance at adding a seat. My projection for the U.S. Senate is. Is that the Republicans narrowly win the Senate in part because Oz beats Fetterman, and then I think Laxalt beats Cortez Masto in Nevada, which makes me, I don't know all of these people. I know some of them. It's interesting, this role, because as someone who's now trying to revamp the system itself, you know, like I don't want to be... piling in on one side or the other. And at this point, we've endorsed Republicans, independents, and Democrats alike. But I think that the Republicans taking both the House and the Senate will have massive repercussions.
Yeah, I feel the same way, although I do feel like at 22, I probably don't have enough life experience to be the most credible person, aside from the fact that I'm coming up through the context of somebody who's totally disillusioned with bipartisanship because it's all I've really known.
And you're speaking for a lot of people on that. So
yeah, I mean, I'm shocked, actually, like since I've been speaking out and being more vocal about my own beliefs, the amount of people in my life that I would never know think similarly or have similar suspicions about the system, that like I'm the human repository for all the like New Yorkers who pretend that they're like, yeah, no, I'm totally blue, I'm totally down the line. Like, no, everyone secretly has their doubts and has a lot more kind of forward party energy than I think people realize.
Love it. And you're activating a lot of that energy too. It takes someone who's independent and principled and intellectually courageous like yourself, because I know, you know, like it's not easy to raise your hand and say, hey guys, like I'm not sure this stuff is.
Well, shockingly, it's been pretty well received by and large. But I would say in my limited realm of expertise here, that I feel the same way, that I think that there will be both the House and Senate going red.
Yeah. I'm there too. My big prediction that might change things somewhat is I think Evan McMullen pulls it out in Utah. And so I was just in Utah campaigning for Evan. Are you into this race?
I haven't been specifically, no.
Oh, right. So I have to get excited about it because to me it's like the most important Senate race in the country. So check it out. Evan McMullen goes to the Middle East and is a CIA operative for 11 years after 9/11. So 2001 to 2012. Comes back, goes to business school, and then is stunned by the rise of Trump in 2016. Mm-hmm. Says, this is uncool. And so he runs as essentially a Republican protest candidate in 2016 and gets 21% of the vote in Utah, where he's from. He's a Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And his now opponent, Mike Lee, voted for Evan McMullen in 2016 because at the time he wasn't that into Trump.
Yeah.
Fast forward 6 years, Evan McMullen's running for Senate and the Democrats of Utah decided not to run a candidate.
Okay.
Because they knew that if they ran a candidate, they would lose to Mike Lee in a state that Trump won by 21 points. Mike Lee was just going to coast. So they get out of the way. Evan McMullen now is pulling neck and neck with Mike Lee. And if he wins, he's saying that he will not caucus with either party. So he'd be a genuine, independent U.S. senator who might actually be the difference maker between one party or another being able to pass everything or needing his vote. Because he could be the Manchin on the other side.
Got it.
And plus, he's a great guy. He's a principal leader. He actually co-founded one of the organizations that merged with the Forward Party this summer. So his people and Forward have like a ton of overlap. So this could be a demonstration of the fact that an independent can build a coalition of Democrats, independents, and Republicans to defeat, in this case, Mike Lee is also a Trump endorsed, Ted Cruz endorsed, like that type of character, in a state that's reliably red. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so actually my funny little piece of context that I have here is, I don't know if you've seen what Tucker Carlson has to say about him.
Oh yeah, he called it.
He basically like the classic like spoiler effect argument, or he's secretly a Democrat in an independent chief's clothing, which to me it's like, totally unconvinced by. I'm like, okay, like somebody doesn't fit cleanly and is therefore threatening to a duopoly candidate. And so
why I love him.
Therefore, why I love pull him so down. Much. Yeah. I think he was, Tucker had photoshopped his face on a McMuffin, and that was the kind of best burn he could come up with. But I'd be really interested to see if that happens. I mean, I think that there needs to be more Manchin type characters in politics, because not necessarily his own personal viewpoints, but the idea that there could be someone who's actually holding out if some enormous package doesn't actually serve their constituents should be something that happens more and more in our politics. It's frightening to me to see like Manchin become the darling of the right and Liz Cheney become the darling of the left just because they're somebody who's standing on a different area of just like one issue, and then all of a sudden they're loved by the other party. Like, why don't we just have more nuanced, interesting, different people?
Well, you know, one of the funny things that happened after I left the Democratic Party is that I got requests to be on Fox every day for weeks afterwards, because anything that kind of beats up one side, they're like, oh, come here. And then I was like, that's not why I'm doing this. I'm trying to change the system. And so I frankly declined, virtually all of those requests because we're trying to build something new and exciting here that provides a home for folks who are genuinely not spoken for on either side. One of the things that people don't realize, to the extent that they perhaps should, is that the 2024 Senate landscape is very, very dramatically tilted for Republicans and against Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So right now that this election is Democrat, the Democrats have a legitimate chance to hold. One thing we haven't talked about is the Georgia race. What I think is going to happen in Georgia is that, and that one's Reverend Warnock versus Herschel Walker.
Yeah.
I think it goes to a runoff because there's a Libertarian who's getting 4% of the vote there, and you need 50% to win outright. So believe it or not, everyone, and some of you remember this from 2 years ago, I think that the politicos of the world are going to descend on Georgia for another month because the runoff would take place on December 6th, I believe, 4 weeks after. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine, you know, after all of this energy and election day, everyone's going to run to Georgia and be like, hey, guys, it's Warnock one-on-one versus Walker.
Yeah. That would be fascinating to see.
Yeah. That race is, I think Warnock pulls it off when it's just the two of them. I think the entire thing is very close, but I think it goes to a runoff.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Herschel Walker has just been like one terrible headline after the next for his race. And I mean, even just more broadly, the rise of the kind of celebrity candidate to me is, I just don't totally love. Even Dr. Oz is also like, what is going on? I feel like just a decade ago, it would be unimaginable to have so many of these like kind of pop culture-y figures. I mean, to dream that Donald Trump would have been our president would have been unimaginable.
That's like a Simpsons episode.
Yeah, quite literally. I think we're living in one now. But
One of the things I think sometimes, Ricky, is like, what would be the most effed up plot line? And be like, that's probably what happens.
Yeah, probably. So, and then also in Georgia, one thing that I found interesting that I haven't really heard a succinct argument for is that Stacey Abrams seems to be struggling in the Black community, specifically with Black men, which I think surprised a lot of people in terms of polling numbers. I'd be interested to see how that actually pans out.
We should talk about the gubernatorial races. So it looks like Stacey is going to fall short to Kemp.
Mm-hmm.
And it also seems like she's running behind Warnock. Warnock is, and you could also invert that and say Walker is running behind Kemp, which is accurate. Kemp is a relatively popular, established governor. The Stacey Abrams campaign, it's had a different energy than her past campaign, where it seemed like everyone was in love with her and she just fell short. I mean, the parallel there is actually, in my mind, Beto O'Rourke in Texas.
Yeah.
So full disclosure, I'm friends with Beto from the presidential. Like, I like him. But I think that they're both running again in their states. And I think Stacey's going to perform worse this time than she did last time. I wasn't aware of her not getting that sort of support from Black men, but when you say it out loud, it doesn't shock me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it was a surprise to most people watching the polls there that was where the wind was kind of coming out of her sails. Do you have a sense of why she might be losing momentum over like her darling status in the past?
You know, I think one of the problems that besets folks in a particular lane is that as you are around for a longer period of time, you start feeling like a bit more of like an establishment figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and so there are folks then who just feel a little bit less energized. And I don't think that's a healthy thing necessarily because, you know, it's like you can't always be that new exciting face.
<Yeah.
laughs>
That's true.
But there have been some flubs or missteps in that campaign that I think have been used against her.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
So in terms of races around the country, are there any specific forward endorsed people that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, you'll be happy to know that if someone wants to know about all the Forward endorsements, you can go to forwardparty.com and also take a look at last week's episode where like all we did is talk Forward. Mm-hmm. I just talked about Evan again because to me that's the most exciting, interesting Senate race. But we have endorsed dozens of candidates. We're getting behind them. I'm going to be campaigning for some of them in the days leading up to Election Day in Nevada. The other major one is this ballot initiative in Nevada that would shift their voting process to nonpartisan primaries and ranked choice voting. Mm-hmm. Final Five. Mm-hmm. You must be a Final Five fan, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I am. I was telling you before, I just submitted an op-ed for the New York Post advocating for open primaries and ranked choice voting.
Way to go, Ricky.
Normalize that with the older Republican community here. But I think even... I haven't really heard a lot of good, solid resistance to that proposal. I think it's mostly a lack of people understanding the reason behind it. And so I wrote that op-ed specifically with my own experience of just having moved my voter registration to New York from New Jersey, where I was just living with my parents before I moved here fully, and realizing that, like, oh, I just lost my total voice as an independent here in terms of the primary elections that actually determine almost all of our local politics. And so I use that as a lens because I see that there's a huge lack of awareness around this issue. And if people actually listen to the arguments of how this could moderate things and probably move us better to a better mean of the political opinions in a certain area, I mean, I think bringing awareness to that as much as possible is a great thing. So,
well, it's on the ballot in Nevada, and I agree with you. If voters understand it, they're like, interesting, I can vote for anyone I want, eh?
Yeah.
Like, yes, you can. And I've heard a lot of independents get very upset about the fact that their tax dollars are financing elections that they may not be able to participate in meaningfully because they're not registered for one party or another.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the Democratic primary is what decides almost everything that happens in New York City. And here I am just sitting on the sidelines like, well, okay, sure. So I think bringing as much awareness to that fact as possible is a good thing. I also think there's a lot of people on the right who would be amenable to things like that, especially as there's the fracture of the kind of MAGA Republicans and a huge swath of people who just don't identify with that, who might like to see, rather than the most extreme polarized voters showing up at the primaries to vote for a MAGA candidate, something that's actually closer to the average of their viewpoints.
Thank goodness. So ranked choice voting was used to choose Glenn Youngkin for the Virginia governor race. Yeah. And so there are moderate Republicans who are like, look, guys, this just helps us elect people who are going to win in the general, as opposed to someone who's more of a Sarah Palin-esque figure who ends up failing in this process.
Yeah, totally. Also, the Youngkin race reminds me that it's interesting how hot education was as a topic for that cycle. And it's just totally shifted, I think. I think that's just kind of on the back burner with inflation, with crime, with abortion. It's just totally inverted.
Those education stats break my heart. That where American kids' reading and math scores plummeted.
It's awful. And I think it's frustrating for a lot of people who were kind of ringing the alarm bells pretty early on and saying, like, these kids are the least at-risk medical group here. And we also had data very early on that showed that kids don't transmit it to adults as readily as adults do to each other. And I think it's for a lot of people who've been suspicious of the school closure policies, it's super frustrating to see this kind of like quiet, gradual admission that, like, yeah, we absolutely pulled the rug out from under the feet of an entire generation of kids.
And there's a real lack of accountability and honesty. If there's some message I'd love for Forward to end up representing, is just a reliance upon facts. And, you know, Democrats right now continuously denigrate Republicans as like election deniers or people who deny certain facts. But there have been facts that Democrats have been very happy to ignore or sweep under the rug that didn't fit a particular narrative. And school closures is probably, in my mind, top of that list where, look, like, we had data from other countries, other environments. Yeah. The risks of having kids in school in terms of getting sick were very, very low. But the risks of them falling behind in their education or their emotional development were sky high. And I say this as a parent, you know, I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old and like we were living a version of it. And so we were like, hey guys, you know, I mean, one of my ideas at the time was like, at a minimum during the pleasant days of the fall and the spring, why don't we just let the kids have school outside? You know, like they can do it old school with a teacher. That image actually made me kind of happy. Mm-hmm. But there was zero effort in that direction.
Yeah, it was really frustrating to watch that happen. And even as a very old kid during the pandemic and a college student at the time, I've seen a lot of my friends are still struggling with what happens when the 2 years that you're supposed to be networking with professors or going to college fairs and figuring out what you want to do and doing an actual internship and realizing like, oh, I'm glad that I'm not going into that field now. That was a good experience. Like, all the way up through developmental phases, I think it's most acute the younger you are. But like for an entire generation of people, they're going to have lifelong impacts from this. And I think it's staggering even to have seen the fact that there were private schools open while public schools across the street that were closed happened. Was just such an injustice. I think it'll exacerbate going down forward, like into the future, it'll exacerbate inequalities in a way that I don't even think we can imagine right now in terms of the learning loss and the developmental loss.
There were Democrats that raised their hands and say, hey, look, they're going to be disadvantaged kids who suffer the most from this, and just completely ignored.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, I think it's shocking. I don't know do you feel that that's having still an effect on this election cycle?
I think it is, in the sense that there right now is this pervasive skepticism and mistrust of institutions.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to end up feeding the Republicans, frankly. Though, if you're watching this and you still have a chance to vote or listening, don't take it as like, hey, this is all baked. Like, you can get out and vote and maybe you can change everything me and Ricky are saying.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
I was touching on this before. So in 2024, there are many, many vulnerable Democratic senators in states that they would be hard-pressed to win. And you mentioned one of them earlier, Joe Manchin, Democratic senator in West Virginia. Trump won West Virginia by 28 points. It's a deep red state.
Yeah.
And he's on the ballot as a Democrat. John Tester in Montana. I think Montana is also deep red. Mm-hmm. And so that there are several Democratic senators that are going to have a really, really hard time winning in 24. So this Senate race is in many ways Democrats' last chance to hold the Senate for the foreseeable. There are some noises. Oh, gosh. I don't know if I'm breaking any news here. But there are some noises about Joe Manchin running for president in 24 because he's unlikely to be able to win his Senate race.
Interesting. And do you think that that would be a successful ticket or potentially a viable one?
You know, I'm not sure who's going to be excited for a Joe Manchin candidacy because there are a lot of Democrats who aren't fans. I'm not sure if traditional Republicans are going to be fans.
I can't imagine that they would be. It would depend on who the opposite ticket is, though. I mean, if you had another like MAGA election type.
So I think it's going to be Trump versus Biden. And then there's talk about Manchin running on a unity ticket.
You think Biden's going to pull it off for the next go round?
When you say pull it off, what do you mean?
Like, I mean, I think there's a good chance that he says, I'm not ready for a whole nother 4 years. I don't know. I don't know if I feel like he's got the mental acuity to go through that many more years into the future.
So one thing that we're seeing is that the midterms will affect Joe's stance and attitude toward running again.
Yeah.
But right now he's planning on running again. And he's planning on running again in part because it seems like Trump's coming up the other side. And Joe feels like it's got his God-given responsibility to defeat Trump. He's done it once. Mm. He's not sure who else can do it. And so he's going to...
I'm not sure that he can do it. I don't know. Like, I just... the optics of another Biden and Trump election just really is disheartening to me. Like, I would... the idea of, like, a third election where I think that almost everyone is saying, I don't totally love who I'm voting for, but I'm voting for them. Oh, I don't know. So you think DeSantis, there's no way that he's taking over Trump's spot here?
I think if Trump runs, he wins. I think Trump has 50%. So the Republican field looks like, here are some of the folks that I think are running. Chris Christie runs, Larry Hogan runs, Mike Pompeo runs, Mike Pence runs, Trump runs. And then there'll be a couple of others. And then I think Trump gets his 40 to 50%, and then everyone else splits the other 50%, and he ends up rolling. The big question mark is DeSantis, but if you're DeSantis, you sit it out, you're the heir apparent next cycle, and if you go in, then it's like a death match between him and Trump did make DeSantis. I mean, that is like accurate. So I think Trump winds up the Republican nominee, and then Joe feels like he has to run. And I said on CNN the other day that if Joe runs, then the Democrats will clear the field and not let anyone run against him. And then if someone from outside of the Democratic establishment says, I'm going to run against him, and I suggested Nina Turner as a possibility, because Nina's like, whatever, she doesn't care what the Democrats say, that the DNC would quietly just like short-circuit the process, because the last thing they'd want is 81-year-old Joe Biden debating Nina Turner five times or Marianne Williamson. And then Paul Begala was like, I was like, how are they going to do that? They can't do that. And I was like, well, I guess we'll find out together. But like, I can't imagine that Democrats would have a robust process if Joe's going to run and Trump's coming up the other side.
So this
is the way I see it shaking out right now, but it could change. If Joe doesn't run, then you're going to see a dog pile of Democratic candidates pile in. Which it sounds like that's what you think is going to happen.
That's what I mean. I would just hope for a new dog pile on both sides, but it might be a little idealistic. But I don't know. I can't imagine, especially looking at the approval ratings of younger people with Biden, which like he tanked like 20% with Gen Z in terms of how excited we are about him going into the presidency and where we are now. And I think, I don't know, I think there's like such a lack of youth excitement about Joe. I don't know. I don't know if he can muster people, especially a whole new generation of voters, to be super excited about him. I think it's like a, well, it's better than the other option kind of person.
But to your point, 58% of Americans would not be excited about either Trump or Biden, which leaves an opening a mile wide. For a unity ticket or something along those lines, which is some of what's fueling the thought of a Joe Manchin plus, let's say, Liz Cheney run. Like that's...
That'd be interesting.
So my argument is that, look, you need an organic process that ends up including people and feels genuinely grassroots and democratic. And then you could get energy around different types of people, just like a different flavor of establishment is not necessarily what a lot of folks are looking for.
Absolutely.
But you should know that some of these things are probably coming down the pike from what I'm hearing.
I mean, I've heard the same, but I wouldn't be surprised if something flips between now and then. I'm not sure. He's had so many bad like news cycles and headlines and blunders that I don't know what's going to come down between now and 24. But I don't know. But if that means clearing the space for an actual formidable nonpartisan candidate, I'll be excited about that. I'll look forward to seeing it.
Well, you know, I do have those conversations. So there you have it about Election Day 2022. Get out and vote. Make your voice heard. If you still have the chance to support candidates under the sun, I'm obviously an Evan McMullen fan. I'm a Final Five voting in Nevada fan. But just find people that are worth supporting. And we'll see if we can't maybe surprise some people in some way. You might even surprise me and Ricky, because you've heard what we think is going to happen. And, you know, maybe... we'll end up
putting
along
our feet in our mouths right now.
or in a way, because it's funny. One of the things I was saying is like, look, there are things I want to happen and things I think will happen.
Yeah.
so some of the things I've described today, like this is what I think will happen, but I'd be happy to be wrong.
Yeah, I'd be happy to be surprised in some places. I think that's what a healthy democracy does is, actually once in a while there's the surprise candidate that no one would ever really expected pull through because that's the will of the voter. And I think there have been too many that have been in the bag. So I'd be happy to be wrong on predictions for sure.
So I think we are going to be surprised somewhere in the landscape where an underdog is going to pull out an upset. And I think that underdog is likely to be... like a Lee Zeldin type Republican where people are like, you're not going to win in a blue state. And then a lot of voters just quietly filed in and voted.
I don't know. I wouldn't be totally floored if Zeldin pulls it off, but
at this point, I expect that there's going to be some result that people will look at and say like, wow, that's nearly unprecedented.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we'll recoup and see who it
was. We'll bring you back. We'll see how we did. But again, make your voice heard. Get out and support candidates. If you want to see the candidates that we're backing at Forward, go to forwardparty.com/endorsements. Ricky, thank you so much. Where can people catch up with you?
Thank you. So I guess the best place would be at Twitter, just Ricky Schlotz, my handle, and kind of aggregate all my different stuff there. And and when the book comes out in September, it'll all be on my Twitter page. So.
Well, yeah. Ricky, thank you for being a role model and voice for the next generation. Appreciate the heck out of you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And thanks for inspiring me to do that.
I'm just benefiting from it like everyone else.